Today on Movie World, as we bring our final coverage from the Tribeca Film Festival 2019. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your daily dose of film reviews and movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love your movies, this show is for you. And then said daily dose, because this is the last of our daily podcasts from Tribeca. It's a little bit of a fraud because we're now back home. We weren't able to record on site, so that's why this podcast is coming out a few days after the other ones. But finally back home in the land of the living, recording here on May 4th. May the 4th be with you, Star Wars fans. And
wow, what a festival.
Tribeca was great again this year.
And it still continues. I believe today's the last day.
Correct.
If you're in New York City, I hope you have your butts
in
the seat.
I think today or tomorrow.
Either one. I'll look it up.
And the sound of chomping you can hear there is us.
Oh, well,
no. Movie Rollers is brought to you by foods of various kinds. And I think we're chomping away at the remains of something that Rashmi and I picked up from
I think it's called like
vacation.
A torta.
It's this
nutty, seedy,
it's
beautiful,
it's insanely
citrusy,
delicious.
Yummy, well, toffee thing.
I would take a picture and Instagram it apart from
it. It's all gone.
It's gone. Yeah, we've...
We literally devoured it.
And
so
the paper
good.
Is delicious. You know, if you just eat the paper, I kid you not, it melts in your mouth.
It's edible paper.
Some.
Yeah,
you can
no.
have some of mine. I left it here.
Okay.
I was having a bit of a
hissy
conniption
fit.
About
sissy
the,
fit. Yes.
The fact that the thing was covered in paper that I couldn't remove, and then I realised the paper is the edible kind.
Yeah.
It dissolves and melts away. Anyhow, we've got quite a lot to talk about today with our last day of festival coverage, so... and I guess we should try and pick a personal favorite each. Yeah, I know, it's so hard.
So many.
So the last day is May the 5th. Tomorrow.
May the 5th, okay.
Okay,
so. But yeah, there's so many. So I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give my favorites and then shout outs to two other movies.
That's not one. That sounds like five.
That is five.
That's like, yes, DVD is
I
half.
Thought we were doing top three, no?
I tried for top two. I tried for favorite narrative and favorite documentary, and Joe poo-pooed it, so
Joe.
It's too hard.
It's your favorite, not your
Look,
favorites.
Just call out a couple of standout
okay there
movies.
You go
so
there you go
choice,
there
so.
You go
okay so I guess we can start with the movie Low Tide, which is the one that I caught the first thing of the final day that we were there. So
yep.
Rashmi, can you describe
I
Low
can.
Tide
So, Low Tide, the summary is Alan, Red, and Smitty spend high summer on the Jersey Shore, roving the boardwalk and getting into trouble. But the discovery of good old-fashioned treasure sets the friends on an escalating course of suspicion and violence in the atmospheric thriller. And this is directed by Kevin McMullen, and written by him as well. And it sounds like a modern-day kind of adventure story.
No, it's adventures, not the right word. It's kind of like one of those films that we've seen before many times. Kings of Summer, it has that kind of, you know, very good sense of place. So, yeah, it's set in Connecticut in a town where, you know, essentially, you know, a lot of people come on holiday. You know, this kind of a place where, you know, people who might go to the Hamptons in summer would go. But instead, if this follows kind of the local town kids. And look, I mean, this is a very, very well-made movie. I think from the first few frames, you kind of know that you're in good hands. It opens just with the right tone and the right look. The performances are very good. The story itself, I think, is the kind of thing we've seen before, right? So we have, you know, a bunch of friends, you know, good kids, bad kids, you know, the honest kids. And it does a really nice job of kind of setting up the relationships between the two are brothers. You know, one of them's kind of a bad egg and not the right kind of influence. But the characters are really strongly... you know, drawn in this movie, and the movie itself has just a kind of a wonderful pace. It feels kind of reminiscent. Kings of Summer is a great comparison because mm-hmm. I think, you know, that for the first part of the movie, you kind of have this very enjoyable, dreamy, and by dreamy, I mean not kind of, you know, surreal dreamy, but this, you know, this sense of, you know, what it's like to be a teenage boy in a place where, you know, you can get up to kind of mischief and your friendship and being together is kind of everything. They very quickly get into, you know, dark mischief in terms of, you know, they...
Drugs?
No. Thievery, so burglary. Mm. So they part of what they do is they break into houses. And as you can imagine, you know, these kids are at kind of crossroads in their life where, you know, you may get into certain shenanigans at a certain age that would be, if you continue down that path, could lead you to, you know, one type of life, or you can get your act together and avoid, you know, criminal consequences, that kind of thing. So this is that point in their life where they're doing that. But the performances throughout are just very believable. The chemistry between all of the boys is very good as well. You know, the plot is just very well executed. I mean, you know, despite the fact that this story is familiar, it has a couple of reversals of fortunes within it, and there's some really nice tension that the movie builds as you're not quite sure whose side to be on, who's ultimately going to prevail here. So, a fun little movie, and it's the kind of thing that I do hope gets a release here, because again, I think the performances here are very strong. The director had us in the right tone all the way through. So I really liked Low Tide. I think it was kind of the unsung hero of the festival. It came, I think, without much in the way of fanfare, and I think it's a lovely little movie.
Sounds right up my alley.
It is, yeah. I think, yes, you would get a lot out of this. Rashmi, maybe it's a little too masculine for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, it felt great. Okay. Movie number two that we're going to talk about today then is the movie Plus One. And I'll introduce that one very briefly. Single college friends Ben and Alice band together to survive a summer full of weddings in which everyone around them seems to be coupling off, including Ben's dad. Each serves as the other's date to help them navigate speeches, photo booths, and prospective hookups until they realize they have great chemistry with each other. This is written and directed by Jeff Chan and Andrew Reimer, so kind of a writing-directing duo here. And the movie stars Maya Erskine and Jack Quaid of Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid offspring fame. Ed Begley Jr., Rosalind Chow, Beck Bennett, Finn Wittrock. So, guys, what did you think of the movie Plus One?
So, this is right up my alley again. This is a romantic comedy with capital glowing letters. And the story is as old as the hills. I mean, for crying out loud, we saw this in When Harry Met Sally. And it's been through, you know, hundreds of other movies. But the script of this movie is so sharp. It's so wonderfully written. And it's very capably directed and acted. Particularly the acting. We'll talk about the acting in a minute. That it came off looking really, really fresh. I kind of found myself in, because I'm single, I kind of found myself kind of really echoing what both of the characters were going through at different time points. You know, it kind of knows exactly that it's in that rom-com territory, but it really kind of circumvents those rules, plays by them beautifully. I laughed and I cried. I love this. And I'm going to say it up front. This is one of my favorite films of the Tribeca Film Festival.
Wow. I'm with Yazdi. I'm in love with this movie. This is the perfect update to something like When Harry Met Sally. And gosh, you know, Sally's son is in it. But
oh,
you know,
that's true. I didn't even think
about
that.
Yeah. This is note perfect. This is really fresh. Of course, it's predictable, but the journey is so good getting to the predictability that it doesn't matter. And it's funny and witty, and it just the beginning is this series of like almost like YouTube vignettes of people giving Of people's weddings, crazy things that happen at people's weddings, giving speeches.
People giving, yeah,
right? The speeches. People giving their speeches.
Their toast at the wedding, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just beautifully realized. And it does draw heavily on that kind of When Harry Met Sally formula, but it does it so well that you just want to, like, love this movie. I love this movie. This is one of my favorite movies of Tribeca.
Wow.
It's so good. And it's acted so well. The chemistry between the two leads is just wonderful to watch. And it's not, you know, it's so easy to do corny.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't get corny at all.
Yep.
And we're in a room full of, like, film critics.
Jaded film critics.
Who are difficult to please. And there was so much laughing, hysterical belly laughing at some points.
Yeah, and I think... Both characters in the movie, they play best friends who are kind of looking out for each other because, you know, they're both single and they hate going to weddings where everybody asks them, how come you're not married? What happened? Blah, blah, blah. So they decide to come up with this pact and blah, you know, you know how the movie is going to turn out. So each character has to go through a transformation. And of course, there's a lot of jokes. None of it gets muddy, to its great credit. But when each of those characters go through the transformation, it's entirely believable. I went through that journey with them. Even when I knew what the destination was, I believed the change that happened in each of the two characters. And I think, I don't know what it is, maybe we should thank, you know, Crazy Rich Asians or whatever, but it's so wonderful that a lead character is Asian and has her own kind of surrounding Asian
world,
universe around her,
world,
very well,
yeah,
realized world. So it's maybe that's what you have never seen before. And Maya Erskine is so good. Yeah, I don't know where.
She's so funny. She's done a ton of stuff.
I haven't seen her anywhere before, but she just nails this. I mean, she kind of reminded me a little bit of Awkwafina, but she,
yes.
I think she, the emotional stuff, she just knocks it out of the park. And then Jack Quaid is very good too. Again, very believable. So, you know, after you've seen a million romantic comedy, that one can come along and still surprise you speaks to the power of this movie. It's good stuff.
Brilliant.
Joe,
wow.
Did you see it?
No, this was one of the ones, I think I was watching Low Tide at the time you guys were in this one. And it's interesting. I mean, this is a writer-director duo, and this is their first work, as far as I can tell, at least.
It is produced by Ben Stiller, so you can tell that there's some confidence there.
Okay,
I
wow.
Just, my only hope is this movie doesn't get lost, you know, in the melee of 100 other movies and somehow kind of gets to people. Because if people get to see it, it'll be great. I don't care if it shows up on Amazon Prime or Netflix, or it would be great if it showed up in the theaters, but there's a need for these kind of movies at a particular time.
And it's interesting. I mean, rom-coms are very hard to market these days. You know, I'll be the first to admit that my eyes might roll at the idea of going to see a rom-com, but when they're well executed, they're among the best of all movies in terms of, you know, a good time at the theatre. So.
This is so funny. And both Jack Quaid and Anna Maya Erskine, their comedic timing and their physicality is so funny.
Terrific stuff.
And so believable. I mean, that there's the first scene which opens the movie where she's going to helping him rehearse a toast at an upcoming wedding. And right from there, their comic timing is like, it's like fireworks, like boom, 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 like they're doing a whole kind of vaudeville act, you know, like dancing together. And that continues through the whole movie. So good on them.
They're a delight to watch.
Fantastic. Okay. Movie number three to talk about then is the movie Dreamland.
Okay.
And Rashmi, I
have that. So I picked this one because Margot Robbie was in it, but this is Dreamland, directed by Miles Joris Peyrefitte. So in Dust Bowl, it was very Americana, right? In Dust Bowl era Texas, Eugene Evans, a young man living on a farm where his family is coping with the dust storms and depression, tries to help make ends meet. After five people are killed during a holdup in a nearby town, a $20,000 bounty is placed on the capture of the bank robber Allison Wells, who's played by Margot Robbie. So I think that's all I'll say about it. This is, like I said, directed by Miles Joris Peyrefitte and screen written by Nicholas Swart. So I was quite excited to see this one. But Joe, what did you think of this?
So, you know, I went in without knowing much about it, other than, you know, Margot Robbie is the kind of the cast. And it's one of those things with film festivals, right? You often don't have a lot to go on in terms of knowing about a movie before you walk in. So I did, you know, I do admit to kind of walking in somewhat cold to the narrative of this. What I'll say is, you know, it's not my favorite film of the festival. And I say that, you know, only because I think it's the high standard of everything else around it that I think has kind of knocked it down a peg or two in my estimation. It's, you know, an enjoyable kind of romp. And I'll say that because I think the movie itself felt a little anachronistic. It felt very, you know, 21st century, despite its setting of the in some in the very 19th century.
Story-wise, right?
Story-wise, yeah. Dialogue-wise, and so I never quite found myself transported back to the time and place that the movie was really set in. And you know, the characters are very likable, but I think there's a kind of a will they, won't they element to the interaction between Margot Robbie and the male protagonist. That didn't quite work for me. I didn't quite buy the chemistry. And I think what the movie was aiming for was perhaps this kind of tension of, you know, is she using him or is she interested? Or if she is just using him, will she, you know, turn to become romantically involved, and those kind of plot elements didn't work. But you know, it was definitely you know, it's not a poor movie by any measure, and I think it just, like I say, when there's so much other quality here at the film festival, I felt like this one failed to rise above the others.
Yeah, it's very clear that whoever has written and directed this, and I was trying to find out more about the director, but I couldn't. He has made one other movie called As You Are, and he seems fairly young. He's mostly an actor, but I think he's starting out into directing. This person clearly has a very high regard for the genre, for the Western Americana genre, and this movie, the entire movie is kind of an homage to the olden times of gunslingers and
Bonnie and Clyde.
It's very reminiscent of Bonnie and Clyde, and I think that's kind of where this movie is headed towards, even with its plot structure. So I think from that perspective, they probably fulfilled their dream. It is kind of very much set in this nostalgic kind of time. While I was watching it, it was perfectly enjoyable. It's very entertaining. It's, I would say, for the most part, unpredictable. I personally didn't think that anything romantic would happen between them because of the age difference. Because, you know, he's a teenager and she's obviously not, and so forth. But so I think I wasn't sure where the movie was going. And at the end of the day, it, unfortunately, like you, Joe, it doesn't amount to much. The ending is really long, drawn out characters for a while. But what can I say? I mean, it has committed performances, both from Finn Cole, who I've never seen before. He's good. And Margot Robbie. They're both very committed. But it kind of felt like we've been down this road before. So I don't want to bash up this movie too much because there's nothing to fault here. I think it's very handsomely mounted. It's very well acted. It's made with good intentions. It gets where it wants to. I guess I want more.
So
you hated it, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I didn't hate it. But for me, it feels like an incomplete movie, and it plays like a play of sorts. But most of all, I just came away feeling like it's a young boy's fantasy of sort of running away and having this adventure with this beautiful woman who has been involved in a bank robbery and he has to save her somehow. So I think at its core, it could have been probably a little bit more fleshed out. But the interesting thing is that it's told through the eyes of his younger sister. So tonally, it didn't make sense to me. You know, you're seeing the story of her brother who's having a fantasy with this older woman, in a sense, is how I kind of saw it. But it's told through the young eyes of his sister. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it's terrible. It just didn't feel complete as a movie as a whole. And I just, like you, Joe, I didn't buy it. I just didn't buy that. I wish it had decided to go one way or another, right? Clearly, it felt like Margot Robbie has to develop a relationship with the main protagonist in order to free herself, you know, but I don't know. It didn't quite work.
And I'm struggling because I can't put my finger on. I mean, again, I would recommend this to anyone.
Yeah, I think go it's watch good it. Enough it's, to watch.
Yeah, it's great. Great to watch. Looks very good.
Production is great.
Production's great. Very well acted. Very committed from everyone. But the souffle doesn't quite fully rise.
Correct. Yes.
And I don't know what's the missing ingredient. Because everything else seems, it seems like all the right ingredients are there, but yeah.
It feels like it was over-edited. There's some story missing. Because if you think about what happens, it all comes together, it all evolves very quickly, it happens very quickly, and then it ends very quickly. So yeah. I don't know, it feels incomplete is how I would describe it. I want to see one movie with Margot Robbie where she doesn't get her boobs out.
Really?
This is
the first time.
I know.
This is the first time I saw them.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Really? Was she naked in Wolf of Wall Street? Anyway,
Again, you know, if you're trying to portray this woman who's a strong bandit, don't make her be naked in a shower. There's no need.
I was surprised, actually, because I didn't think that she did much nudity. But anyway, there's a lot of Margot Robbie in this. This reminds me somewhat of the movie Wildlife, which we saw last year, which
yeah.
was also set in Americana, about this young boy who's trying to kind of figure out the world around him. And, you know,
Carey Mulligan?
That's Carey Mulligan and Jack Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
But that one somehow really packed a pretty strong punch.
Correct.
And I believe this. This one, you're right. Maybe it just seemed too mythical about this boy kind of, you know, he loves reading these pulpy books about gangsters and malls. And then, wouldn't you know it, this, you know, woman on the run lands up in the shed in his own house, and you know, they develop a relationship. And so yeah, maybe the story is a little too packed, but
well, there's a way of selling it, and I think this movie didn't quite get there.
Yeah. Okay, let's end this stream.
Okay, moving on then. The final movie of the day is Lost Transmissions, which Rashmi, you and I saw yesterday. I think you weren't able to get to this one, so can you tell us about Lost Transmissions?
Yes, I will. I had to leave to meet friends. Shame on them. But the selling point for Lost Transmissions is that it stars Simon Pegg and Juno Temple, both of whom we love and adore. So it's directed by Catherine O'Brien, and the summary is as follows, which is that after a memorable introduction at a party, aspiring songwriter Hannah, played by Juno Temple, falls under the spell of talented record producer Theo Ross, played by Simon Pegg. As they become best friends and begin to collaborate, Hannah discovers that Theo is a schizophrenic who refuses to take his medication. As Hannah's career begins to take off, Theo's condition worsens, and he lashes out at friends trying to help him. Undeterred, Hannah undertakes the difficult task of helping Theo salvage his place in the unforgiving Los Angeles music industry, while at the same time getting him into treatment. The numerous obstacles thrown in her way reveal the disturbing inadequacies of mental health care in America. The movie also stars Bria Vinete, who we last saw in The Florida Project.
Yes.
As well as Alexandra Daddario, who we last saw in Baywatch, and Robert Schwartzman as well. So both of you saw it. Tell us.
Joe can go first.
Okay. I already know what Rashmi thinks about this to some extent. We have a rule that we follow on Movie Oilers, which is never discuss the movie before the podcast.
Never.
But film festivals, you know, tend to be an exception to that, in part because there's just so much that, you know, that we see that, you know, kind of getting it out there helps us recall the moments. And this movie has, one huge component to it that will either have it work for you or not. And I think that's the acceptance of Simon Pegg in this serious role, because we are normally used to seeing Simon Pegg as a comedic actor. You know, he has, or a Scotty in, not Scotty,
yeah,
Scotty in the Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, and of course, the Cornetto trilogy
of
movies, which is, you know, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and that kind of thing. So here he is taking on a serious role. And the serious role involves the portrayal of somebody who has, you know, quite serious mental health issues, as is often the case in patients who have mental health issues. He, you know, is not really compliant with his medication, which could bring him back under control, but, you know, kind of dulls his sharpness. And so as a creative person in the role of a music producer, he's inclined to not take his medication because it does dull his creativity. All of that said, for me, he worked extraordinarily well in that role. I think the movie, in my opinion, was very well written, very well acted. I bought the mental health, and I think it cast an eye on the whole, as Yazdi said in the introduction, inadequacy of care of people who have mental health issues. It goes through some pretty dark places. It talks about you know, societal care. It talks about differences between the UK and the US in terms of the healthcare systems, and you know, how especially in the US, you know, mental health is not a well-handled issue. So for me, the movie worked extraordinarily well. I think, you know, it has some problems. The Juno Temple character, in particular, I think I struggled with her relationship with the Simon Pegg character, because I feel like it was not particularly well explained. But nonetheless, the movie worked brilliantly well for me, and I went on its ride with it, and found myself, you know, really quite connected to the story. So Rashmi, I know you struggled with this one a little more.
Yeah, I really struggled with this movie. It was extremely cold in the cinema, and so I ended up like being bundled up, and during quite a serious part in the movie, Joe kind of caught sight of me and burst out laughing. No, because I was so cold.
Actually, Rashmi, that was in Dreamland.
Oh, was it? Okay. It was.
You were cold in both movies.
I was cold in both movies,
but this one I managed to keep it together.
Right, okay. So anyway, look, I think, and this is what I said to Joe, I feel like it's a very insincere performance from Simon Pegg. And I didn't buy the character at all. I didn't buy the relationship between Juno Temple and Simon Pegg. I didn't believe the process as it all came, you know, as we kind of went through their journey together. There's this part where he's sort of, as a schizophrenic, sort of, you know, spouting the likes of these conspiracy theories about how messages are conveyed in radio waves. And it feels like it's almost two movies mushed together. And if I think about the desire to make this a movie about mental illness, then I think about one of the great ones about mental illness was the film The Skeleton Twins,
mm-hmm.
with so Kristen Wiig and
Bill Hader,
and you know, that whole the way she's also kind of going through the system, which was really much more honest, I think, about mental illness. And so I think, again, I found this so tonally inconsistent, and I just found the whole premise very difficult to buy. I didn't like the fact that I didn't understand that the Juno Temple character would have, and I'm not calling it a romantic relationship because it's not, but would have any long-term relationship with this person.
Well, there's a central conceit.
It was
in
very
there,
contrived. Yeah, it's very contrived how they get together. So, not one for me.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from with that. I think, you know, the central conceit of this is that his talent brings out her talent and enables her potentially to have a career within music. And, you know, she's very grateful to him for that, and then finds herself, you know, as any of us might get drawn into, you know, dealing with somebody who has serious issues. I mean, you know, we may have all had a friend at a time when...
Don't talk about Yazdi like that. He's right here.
Sitting in front of you.
Yes.
They go into a very dark place, and you just want to help them. You just want to help them get out of that. I think it's ambitious in terms of its social commentary angle. I think, you know, dealing with a lot of those things is hard to do. I think, again, the mental illness portrayal, you either buy it or you don't.
Yeah.
And Rashmi, again, I think the thing that you probably struggled with the most was the nature of the delusions. You described them as insincere, whereas, you know, having studied a little bit about schizophrenia. I thought it was perfect in terms of how the grasp on reality that this character had. You know, the movie's name comes from this idea that he can hear messages within what to the rest of us are random radio waves. He's tuning. You know, we discover the seriousness of his condition at one point where he's in a car just flipping between static to static stations and kind of pulling out of it messages. So anyway, I thought this was a terrific movie, and I really liked seeing Peg in this role as a serious actor.
Yeah. I was just going to mention, you know, this whole idea of, I feel like it could have been even, or it was trying to be, you know, sometimes we hear about these conspiracy theories and strange things, and then, you know, people say, oh, that man's really crazy or schizophrenic. And I think back to that beautiful film, Safety Not Guaranteed,
mm-hmm.
about, you know, the man who wants
with
to...
With Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, with Aubrey Plaza, written by one of the Duplass brothers.
And acted by one of the Duplass
brothers. You know, it again, for me, the refrain and the focus in that type of a movie versus this one where it's mixed in with this idea of someone being crazy and not well.
But they're very different
I know,
movies.
But I guess I'm trying to sort of say, for me, the whole portrayal of someone being crazy just didn't work. And,
yeah.
you know, the whole sort of... I don't want to take my pills, and
the movie lives or dies on us.
Correct. So yeah, I'll sum it up. Not my cup of tea. I'm glad I didn't translate this one.
And for me, just a very very strong movie. So
I mean, Simon. I was going to comment. Simon Pegg has done his share of serious movies. Remember, he did a movie called Hector and the Search for Happiness with Rosamund Pike, which I really liked a lot.
Okay, so now. Now for something very difficult. So at the end of every series of our Tribeca podcast or Toronto or any of the film festivals that we've covered, we end up trying to just, you know, wrap things up by calling out our favorite movie. It's always almost impossible to do because there's so many
good
things that you get to see. Pitching them against one another is hard to do. Interestingly, Tribeca announced their winners, and the movie that they picked as the winner was Burning Cain.
So Burning Cain won Best U.S. Narrative. The House of Hummingbird, which is a Korean movie, I believe, yes, that won Best International International Narrative. And then Scheme Birds, S-C-H-E-M-E, won the Best Documentary.
Okay, so we covered one of those. That was Burning Cain on the podcast a couple of days ago. Do check out what we thought. And I know, yesterday you struggled with that one a little bit.
I did, yeah. And one you saw, Joseph, The Gasoline Thieves and Scheme Birds, both the filmmakers were awarded as Best New Filmmakers.
Fantastic, yeah. I really, really enjoyed The Gasoline Thieves. Again, listen back to one of our earlier podcasts from Tribeca to get the full scoop on that. So... okay, so now again for the difficult work that we have to do, we should probably just go around and call out our highlights. So, Yazdi, do you want to give it a go?
I think we all watched. I watched 17 movies.
Wow!
I think you all watched about the same.
Something like that.
I came well a day later, yeah. So maybe I watched.
So this is very difficult.
Yes.
Okay, go, Yazdi.
So my favorite films...
and this is going to be like the Oscars, we're going to wrap you up in 2 minutes.
Yes, is the one that we discussed on this podcast, Plus One, which takes the concept of the romantic comedy and one upset. I want everybody to watch this movie. It's a warm cookie with vanilla ice cream on top. It's just...
and chocolate sauce.
And chocolate sauce. So beautiful. The other movie that I really liked is the movie Clementine, which completely is unpredictable, unexpected, has an air of menace about it, and it's beautiful. And then Georgetown is the other movie I liked. What's his name? Christoph Waltz's first directorial effort with Great Turns by Vanessa Redgrave and Annette Bening, and just a very unusual story based on true life.
Okay, I have to give a shout out. Given Yazdi already talked about Plus One, that gives me space to talk about two others then, because I won't repeat. Yeah. And I do agree with his choice. Flawless. This was an impeccable movie. Just beautifully done. What a great concept. What a great idea. What great execution. And what incredible acting. So that was the one about kind of like a coming of age story. It was comedic. It was... scary. It was funny. It was, you know, made you cry. It was very compassionate to its main core idea. So I love Flawless. And then I have to give a shout out to the great documentary At the Heart of Gold, which was the Larry Nassar, which was very difficult to watch, but nonetheless such an important story to be told. And, you know, not preachy, but again, just highlighted the bravery of people who have no room to be brave because they're chasing the dream.
I think At the Heart of Gold, I heard, is going to be shown either on CNN or something.
I hope so. I think it was a CNN movie.
No, it's
was.
An HBO.
Maybe on HBO then. Yeah,
I think it's HBO that's coming.
And, you know, I mean, again, Crown Vic, I know it had its flaws, but for some reason that one stayed with me as well. The cop movie, you know, one is a new cop coming in and one is an sort of old cop who's very close to retirement. For some reason, that one really worked for me as well. Okay, Joe.
Terrific stuff. Yeah, I think both Flawless and At the Heart of Gold would be very high up on my list as well, Rashmi, but because you've stolen those.
You get to do two
I
more,
get to do
yeah.
two others. And I think the ones that kind of rise out as I'm looking back through my notes is the Gasoline Thieves, which, you know, interestingly did pick up an award there, which is terrific stuff, because I think the movie itself, well, not perfect, was... I mean, really, really well done, beautifully shot and edited. And, you know, the performance of the main character, again, was something that will stay with me for a long time. So that movie kind of got under my skin and kind of burrowed a little place in my psyche. So that one I thought was terrific. And then the other one that I think is going to stay with me for some time and requires a second viewing is the movie Loose. So that's Loose, spelled L-U-C-E.
Yes, it was good.
With Naomi Watts and something Harrison Jr. I forgot his name. Calvin Harris Jr. Just a remarkable performance in a movie that, again, has lodged itself well within my brain and mind in terms of its sheer ambition and originality. I think, you know, there's a really dark, twisty, pulpy, messy theme to that film that I think lots of people will really, you know, enjoy. It's a very, very clever script, and, you know, if I was to bash it for anything, it would be for trying to be too clever. But yeah, both standout movies. So, and there are many, many others. I mean, that's the thing. You know, between three of us, we spend our time at Tribeca and we cover, gosh, you know, 20 plus movies, and, you know, it feels like we barely get to scratch the surface. So, you know, that just speaks to the quality and standard of you know, the curation of Tribeca, the way that they put the film festival together. And, you know, as we've said many times on the podcast, get your butt out and support your local film festivals. Oftentimes, to our dismay, this is the only opportunity you'll get to see some of these films, certainly in the big in a theater environment. And I'm a huge proponent of seeing films in the theater.
I'm gonna do a quick rundown of I'm just gonna read the titles of every movie that we saw. Okay, so this is what we've covered: Halston, Charlie Says, Loose, Standing Up, Falling Down, At the Heart of Gold, Come to Daddy, Burning Cane, After Parkland, A Regular Woman, The Gasoline Thieves, Crown Vic, Circus of Books, we have A Taste of Sky, Gully, Rewind, Flawless,
Run,
Clementine, Run, Stray Dolls, Short History of the Long Road, Georgetown, Plus One, Low Tide, Dreamland, Lost Transmission. I think that's everything. Did I catch everything?
I hope you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just, again, remarkable variety of content here.
Yeah.
There's
documentaries,
drama, and really, on that list of movies that you've rattled off there, you know, there just isn't a crappy movie among them.
No, there are ones that I enjoyed less, correct? But none were crappy. Yeah.
So
great job. Great job.
That's remarkable. Again,
yeah, curating.
You know, since we've been doing Movie Wallahs, we see more than our fair share of crappy movies, and film festivals are just not, you know.
No pre-sold franchises, not one.
Yeah.
All novel, interesting, you know, first filmmakers, you know, directorial debuts. Really, really good quality content.
And, you know, considering that Tribeca is always in April, And it's kind of sandwiched between Sundance, which gets a lot of publicity, and then Cannes, which follows in May. You know, those two film festivals kind of grab the buzzy, shiny, sexy movies. But then Tribeca is kind of, you know, they are the ones which have all the gems. You know, they're not necessarily going for the high octane, high voltage movies. They're going for the true gems, and they are here to find.
I'm super fun covering with you guys.
Always a good time to eat with you in New York.
Yes, I was trying to remember all the nice meals we had.
We had many good dumplings. We had an excellent sushi.
We look like Bangladeshi dumplings now.
We had Bangladeshi food. We had
great steak.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Moustache yogurt.
Yay.
White moustache yogurt.
White moustache yogurt.
So, let's bring our coverage here to an end. Thanks again to the producers and the organizers of Tribeca Film Fest. You nailed it. Knocked it out of the park again. So, hope you've enjoyed our coverage of the Tribeca Film Festival.
We'll see you next year.
Always kind of
next year.
A downer when it comes to an end, because it's kind of, you know, a big holiday for us in some ways, and one of the highlights of our year as Movieola. So, yeah, next, if you haven't been, if you don't go. Don't sit here and listen to our podcast. Make sure you sign up. Lots of ways to participate, and check around you. There's the 101 film festivals that you can get involved in. They're really worth supporting. Okay, until our next podcast, which will be a while. I think we're going to get caught up with regular life and regular screenings. Too many movies, too little time. Hey, goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.